What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud 2 Titan. Man, I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and gifted musician. He is also one of the top bass players in the country and has performed and collaborated with some of the biggest names in the jazz community, from Mr. George Duke to Kirk Whalum, Jeff Lorber, and Norman Brown. Please put your hands together and welcome bass player, producer, and songwriter, Michael Manson. What's happening, Michael?
All is well, man. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, man. You know, having somebody with your talent and experience, man, the honor is mine, man. Believe me.
Oh, man, it's mine, really. Seriously.
Man, you've been grinding and just performing left and right with, you know, like I said, man, the biggest names in the jazz community, man.
It's been a pleasure, man, to do. I mean, the career has expanded over 15 years, 20 years, man, and just had an opportunity. It's been a blessing, man, to work with some of the best in the jazz community, in the pop community, man. It's been a real blessing. You know?
How did you start as a bass player, Mike? I mean, I'm pretty sure this had to be at a young age, man, when you started. But, man, what really gave you that drive in that direction where you really wanted to make the bass your primary weapon of destruction, I like to call it?
Well, the truth of the matter, man, is that I started out wanting to play guitar, of course. And then because you know, my big brother played guitar, and I wanted to be just like him. And but then I gravitated towards the bass because of this guy named Al Jarreau. I heard this song, or this CD, I should say, or it wasn't a CD back then. It was 1977. It's called the Live in Europe album. And I heard this guy named Abraham Laborio play bass, man. And I just, like, fell in love with the bass at that point, man. And I was like, the heck with the guitar. I got to go ahead and do this bass thing. Do it right, you know, and it's been a love affair ever since, man. It's been a love affair.
It's funny you mention Al Jarreau. I'm a huge Al Jarreau fan, by the way. So,
yeah, me too, man. And the truth of the matter is, I get a chance to work with him every just about. Well, especially this summer, I'm touring with him in a trio, in jazz trio, playing upright bass and electric bass with him and George and. George Duke, and we're going to get a chance to work together. But I've worked with Al many, many times before, but this is going to be really, really intimate. It's going to be really, really cool to do it this time.
Wow. You know, so give me, Michael, give me some of your other musical influences.
Well, again, I get a chance to, man, to work with my heroes. You know, George is one of my heroes. Coming up and, you know, listening to, you know, all that old funk stuff. And then, you know, just as a person, he's a producer and a keyboardist and, you know, producer musician. And that's what I strive to do as well, be the producer musician and, to play with the kind of heart that he plays with, you know, and to sing like he sings. And, you know, Kirk Whalum, I've been blessed to be able to work with the guys who I've looked up to, and they've been mentors for me, you know, George, Kirk Whalum, Al Jarreau, David Sanborn, all these guys, you know, I've had a chance to work with, and they've been my heroes. You know?
Definitely.
So that's a blessing, man.
Well, you and I, man, we definitely share George Duke as a hero. I'm a keyboardist also, man, and George Duke has been my Obi-Wan Kenobi for keyboarding since I started, man. You know, aside from being a keyboardist, though, man, his production skills, and, you know,
it's amazing.
Man, I don't think a lot of people realize the tracks that he's produced, you know, because he can really just change his sound, man, overnight on every project. Yes. So, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the ultimate chameleon. You know, he can just change that, you know, drop of a hat, you know. And every project seemingly sounds different. It's a different side of him. And that's what I strive for as well. You know, I mean, I've got 3 CDs out already and you know, it took a minute to get into the game, and so there's one CD that kind of tells the side to me, and then there's another CD that's like it, but it's a little bit more funkier, and then, you know, but the next CD, I want to even go even funkier and show another side of me and maybe a little gospel into it, and, you know, I mean, I feel like every CD should be a little bit different, should tell the side of where you are right now, you know, what is your life like right now? That's what the CD should be about.
Definitely. You know, going back, man, I know you were also a church musician, man, and I grew up playing in a church also for 17 years. And, you know, mm-hmm. I talked to a lot of musicians. I try to get them involved in either getting involved playing as a church musician if you're not doing any live shows, just because of the benefits, mm-hmm. man. You get a chance to practice your chops on stage in front of your first audience.
Absolutely.
You know, and also building
Absolutely.
That ear for improv and, you know, picking up covers.
Sure.
You know, I'm a cover king. I love playing covers, man, because that's really my learning tools, you know,
sure.
for getting new jobs and things. So, you know, give me some of your benefits, man, how the church has really, you know, molded your sound as a musician.
Well, man, you know, again, it's like you said, it's a place to really practice your chops in front of, you know, people every Sunday that you see every Sunday, and they know you and you know them, and, you know, it's all family, and, you know, if you make a mistake and you take a risk and you fall flat on your face, it's okay.
Right.
You pick yourself up. You pick yourself up and you go try it again and see if it works the next time. You know, I mean, to me, church is probably one of the best live gigs that is around. You know, I mean, you, again, it's constant. It's there every Sunday, and you get a chance to practice your craft. You have to use your ears, you know. You got to listen. Otherwise, you're going to be out there by yourself, you know.
Right.
And most of the time, there's not reading charts, you know. I mean, sometimes there are. But you have to use your ears a lot, and that's a good thing, you know. I believe in both, you know, being able to read and to do the thing by ear. And if you're blessed enough to play at a church that has both, that's great. But most of the time, it's just about the ear and being able to hear and to be able to accompany. And it really just makes a difference, man, when you come from that vantage point. It's helped me a lot. I know that's right.
Yeah, you know, especially from a live, as a musician, if you're a session player, you know, I think that you'll be able to translate well to other bands, just because gospel music has a huge different styles also, you know, the
Absolutely.
Tempos,
are,
you
yes.
know, the, from the tempos to the key changes to the arrangements, and, you know, it's
Absolutely.
Like, man, that first-hand training, that really takes your playing to the next level if you're going to jazz and R&B. It translates really well, in my opinion.
They do translate very well. In fact, you know, gospel is so, or church music, I should say, has so many facets, so, as you say, so many styles. You know, if you could, you know, handle all the styles that come through there every Sunday, then I think once you're out on the outside, you know, I think you're really good and skilled and ready to go.
Right. Well, Mike, you sound real seasoned, man, as a musician. And I know this, your most recent CD you did, Up Front, man, you took on the role as a producer mm-hmm. and writer on this album. Man, tell me how that experience
sure.
was.
Well, man, it's again, I think, you know, aside from all the production stuff that can be very, very technical, you know, I try to get things that come from the heart, you know, get performances that come from the heart. You know, if somebody's working on the CD, you know, they should be playing from the heart so that it will reach another's heart. And, you know, so the CDs that I try to do, man, they are, you know, I don't know if they're not all that technically proficient, you know what I mean? You know, they're
right.
not chops ridden stuff, you know, but there's stuff that definitely comes from the heart, and I wanted it to reach somebody else's spirit, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
So that's kind of where I'm coming from, you know, from the writer's perspective, from a producer's perspective. I mean, from the producer's perspective, you know, you have to be the quality assurance man. Make sure everything is, you know, just the way you want it, you know, marketable, and make sure that it turns out the way you want it to turn out, you know. And, but even more than that, you know, make sure that the performances and all the things that go into it, the mix and the tracks and stuff, that they're heartfelt performances and they reach somebody else's heart, man. That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I always like to talk to some musicians who are taking that role as a producer. I'm a keyboardist, but I'm also a music producer also. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you definitely have to mm-hmm. wear many hats as a producer.
Absolutely.
You know, visualizing yeah. the overall project from start to finish. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you're not planning a full thing right away, at least you can plan some things along the way. And, You know, the ears got to be tuned different than as a musician, as a producer. You know, sometimes as musicians, because of our skill, we can overplay something sometimes. You know,
so absolutely.
You got to step back and the producer say, okay, man, not as much.
You know, not as much. Yeah, sometimes less is more, you know.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, you have to, as a producer, you have to be able to look at the entire picture. What is this thing going to look like, sound like, feel like at the end? When you're done and you've closed the computer and you've sent the CD off for mastering and sent it out to the people, what is it going to be like? What is it going to feel like? How's this going to affect somebody else? You know, that's what, as a producer, you have to look at that.
Right, definitely. You know, Mike, I got to ask you, man, where do you find your chops as a bass player? I mean, are you the type of creator where you create all of your licks, or do you pull from other legends like Stanley Clark and Louis Johnson of the Brothers Johnson and so forth and kind of mix into your own? Or,
well, you know, I think everybody is like that to a certain extent. Everybody, I mean, you know, let's think about this. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, we're all dealing with the same 12 notes that, you know, they started out with back in Western music history. You know, so nobody's really doing anything new. You know, we're all kind of a product of what we've heard. And so we've heard different licks, and we've tried to emulate different licks and feels and stuff like that. And we've taken from other people, and we've made it our own. And then we use it, you know, as we see fit, you know. And then somebody else will do that. You know, somebody else will listen to us and take those same licks and, you know, use them in their repertoire, you know. That is to say that I've listened to everybody from, you know, and not just bass players, Kirk Whalum and Sanborn and Luther Vandross and Stanley Clark and Marcus Miller and John Patitucci, and all these guys have had an influence on, you know, and these are now my peers, but they've had an influence on my playing, you know?
It does, man. You know, because I hear you're playing, you're a very melodic player. You do a lot of fingering that's really impressive to me, mm-hmm. other than doing the basic slap bass. I mean, you can definitely hold the rhythm, but I really think what stands out as a bass player is the melodic feel in your playing style. You know what I mean? And start actually playing these single notes as a singer would. You know?
Right. And, you know, that's been the ultimate goal of mine, you know, not necessarily to be the bass player, but to be able to sing on the instrument. Now, the instrument, my instrument, bass, has its limitations, but to be able to sing on the instrument, to actually, and I think singing is the most expressive thing that we can do in music, you know, and if you learn how to sing on your instrument, then I think you're reaching people.
Definitely. Now, do you play 4, 5, or 6 string? What's your preference?
I don't like 6 strings, actually.
Okay.
I don't like 7 strings. And I've got a friend that plays the 9 string. I don't like that either.
Wow.
But, no, I most of the time I play, my preference is 4. Most of the time, for the extended range, I play a 5. And then, you know, I have 4 different basses that I use on recordings, a piccolo, a tenor, a more melodic 5-string, and then funk jazz 5-string as well.
Nice. You know, speaking of funk, man, funk has been my foundation as a musician from day one, man. How has that impacted your style as a bass player?
Oh, man, wow. I think it's all my style, man. Coming up, I was, you know, dealing with George Duke and listening to him and Louis Johnson, who I had the opportunity to meet last summer.
Wow.
You know, Larry Graham, all these guys who were just, you know, the funk masters, man, just killing stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was greatly affected by them. And I think it's my style, a lot of what I do, I really reference those guys. In fact, I was just last week, I was talking with Byron Miller. I'm not sure if you know who that is.
I sure do. That's the first basses player on Reach For It, man.
Reach For It. I was just talking with him on Facebook last week, man, and just letting him know, man, I reference him all the time, like, you know, because he's, you know, one of the fathers of this funk thing, you know. And
sure
yeah, so, I mean, you know, it does... my style has a lot to do with what they do, you know, what they do.
Right. You know, I always talk about funk a lot, man, because I tell people, I say, when you really get into funk, it's not only the tempos. Funk can be funky at a high tempo, fast tempo. It can also be funky at a slow tempo. It's just really in that pocket, you know, within you know, what you're delivering your chops and arrangements. And it just it just opens a whole new door for me, creativity, man, right off the jump, you know. So, yeah, man, it just remains.
In fact, man, I just right now, or we're actually not right now, but within the last couple of days, I've been writing this very slow funk tune for my new CD, and it's at 65 BPM. Okay, ooh. That's not very fast at all.
Right.
But it is extremely funky. And it's just an example, as you say, of being really funky at a very, very slow tempo. It doesn't have to be fast and, you know, crazy, you know.
Right.
It can be funky and very slow, you know.
Right. You know, but I guess when people hear a slow tempo, they are automatically thinking, okay, I'm only doing eighth notes, you know, fours, maybe some sixteenths. No, I mean, you can really do some triplets and then really get that thing going, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, there's a lot of, in fact, I would venture to say there's more room at 65 beats per minute there than there is at 108.
Yes. You know? Finally, somebody agrees with me on that, man.
For sure. You know, it's a big deal.
You know, Michael, give me some of your signal chains that you're doing before you actually hit the DAW system or recording. What type of outboard gear are you using on your bass? I mean, to give it that thick, creamy sound that I hear, man.
Sure. Right now, man, I'm using a really, really nice API mic pre.
APIs
are and I also use a Kern. That's spelled K-E-R-N, bass preamp. This is a two bass preamp. And then it goes through another Aguilar preamp and then into my system. So it gets processed three times, basically.
Wow. What are you recording on, Pro Tools or Logic? Or?
Yeah, Pro Tools for sure.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm a Pro Tools guy.
Oh yeah, Pro Tools is cool, man. I've been using Logic. I'm a Logic user, but I use Pro Tools also for you know, do some file transfers and things.
Yeah, I had Logic, and for what my friends tell me is, it's gotten to be a lot more user friendly than it used to be. But when I was trying to learn it, it wasn't all that user friendly. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to learn Pro Tools, and that's going to be it.
Yeah, after Apple took over, you know, it was with eMagic, it was a few little curves and hurdles in there, but, you know, after Apple took over, man, it's just been really user-friendly. Interface is real cool. Yeah. It's really good to dial in, so.
Yeah, that's what I hear, man. But, again, I know Pro Tools inside and out, and so that's kind of where I've been staying, you know. A lot of my producers' friends just tell me, "Hey, man, you learn one thing. If you know that one thing, you ought to stick with it. You know,
oh yeah, definitely.
Don't fix what ain't broken.
Exactly. No,
yeah.
I mean, if
don't fix it.
Well, it stops your workflow when you start something new and you're ready to record. You know, it's like, man, I got to learn this new interface again. And
yeah, I'm not trying to do it, man. You know, just trying to make the music. You know,
all right. You know, Michael, finding that zone, man. I think every musician has experience and kind of hungers for that zone as a musician. Do you find that in the studio or on stage, you know, gravitating to the audience and getting off their energy and things?
The zone, man, I don't know. I think in recording, there is a zone, man. That happens when the thing that's in your head that you visioned comes together. You know what I mean? When you have something in your head and say, this is where I hear it. And when it comes together at the end and says, wow, that's the zone. That's what I was looking for. That was the thing that's in my head. And so I think that's the zone when it comes to recording. Yes, there is a zone. In fact, I just spent a month out in Europe with George. And seemingly every night there was one spot where all of us were just in the zone. Now, this happened pretty consistently every night, you know.
Wow.
But, and the zone would happen like maybe for, I don't know, maybe 2-3 minutes or something like that. But consistently, man, every night it would happen. It's like, and you look around and it's like, oh my God, this is why we play music, you know, that type of thing.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And that definitely happens as well. And I think the audience feels that as well. But, yeah, there's definitely a zone where, you know, everybody's connecting, everybody's communicating, everybody's listening, everybody's giving. You know?
Right.
And
you know, what's cool about the zone, man, is nothing's rehearsed when you're in the zone. You know what I mean? It's just total improv. And if everybody's just connected at that time.
No rehearsing.
Oh, my God. Yeah. There's just no substitute. You know, and be able to capture that on tape and play it back. You can't replicate that again.
Yeah, right. You know, like, you know, you go back and say, hey, man, that was cool what you did tonight. Can you do it again tomorrow? No.
Right.
I can't do it again tomorrow night because I don't know what it was. I mean, it was cool, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, that is definitely a reality, man, where everybody's kind of in sync and doing the thing. And it's a beautiful thing.
It is. So, Michael, for 2010, man, what's on the musical agenda?
Oh, my new record, man. That is primo on the agenda. And I'm recording right now. And I'm having a ball doing it, man. I'm just, in fact, within the next week, I'm going to start posting some video blogs of the sessions that we're doing. And we're just having a ball, man, just making some good music, man. And, you know, as it were, you know, I love it when musicians get together and create stuff. So what happened is that I wrote like 12, 13, you know, really good ideas for songs.
Sure.
And then I'm having, you know, cats come over to the studio and we just, you know, kind of hashing them out and creating and we're just, you know, having a ball doing it, man. You know, yeah, we're eating a lot of pizza, you know, drinking a lot of sodas and stuff, and just kind of chilling and making music, man. Yeah. Life is good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's a blessing to be able to do it, man. And I've got a decent record company that's behind me and good people, good management. And so I'm just excited, man. Excited about the whole thing, you know. And I'm excited about 2010, man. I'm actually looking very much forward to, you know, especially a lot of the people who have been my fans for a long time, you know, getting new music and being able to experience that, you know.
Definitely. Well, we look forward to that, man, especially, man. Like, I've been following you, man. I love your playing, so, hey.
Well, thank you, man. I do appreciate it. Do appreciate it, man.
Well, Michael, it's been a pleasure talking with you, man. It's been a real honor for me, man.
Sure,
I would love
man.
To have you back and talk about your new CD once it's released, man, and we could chop it up all over again.
For sure. Cool, man. Well, let's do that again, man. And again, appreciate the offer. And I've enjoyed my time here, man. It's really cool, yeah.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
All right, man.
All right, take it easy.
You too.
Bye. Big shout out to Mr. Michael Manson for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, always honored to have somebody as seasoned as a musician as he is to, you know, share his musical journey with me and, you know, talk about some of the musicians that he's personally performed with, like George Duke, Al Jarreau. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And also, he's a huge fan of funk, and so am I. You know, I talk about funk pretty much anytime I can. Because that's just my foundation as a musician, amongst other genres as well. But funk is just that genre for me, man, where I really get into that zone and really funk it up. So big shout out to Michael Manson. For more information on Michael, you need to hit his website up at www.mikemanson.com. Again, that's www.mikemanson.com. And for my past and current interviews, I'm also available on myspace.com/SpudsNewZone. www.myspace.com/SpudsNewZone. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast. So if you have a computer or iPhone, open up your iTunes player, go to the iTunes store and type in the producer's corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current reviews as well. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up at spud2tight@gmail.com. And to close the show, I'm going to play one of Michael's tracks. Man, you got to take a listen to it. It's called Coming Right At You. And it's definitely got that melodic flavor, got the funk elements in there, and it's definitely got the jazz blends. It's very commercial, very contemporary. I know you're going to dig it. And I want to thank everybody for joining in and listening in today. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace. Thank you.